Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Thursday, December 1st. I'm Ray Graff. Here it is, the last month of the year. And on today's program, we'll get some year-end tax advice and maybe a look ahead at 2023 from two folks at BST, an accounting, tax, and financial services consulting firm. Judy Cahey and Dawn Doherty are here with us. You got a tax question, maybe a financial planning question for next year? Call 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. That's voxpop@wamc.org for the emails. The number is 800-348-2551. Judy Cahey, Dawn Doherty, and your finance calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On today's show, we get some tax tips for the end of the year, maybe a look ahead to 2023 from BST, an accounting, tax, and financial services consulting firm. Judy Cahey, a regular on this program, has decades of tax experience, extensive knowledge in the areas of individual, corporate, partnership, and estate and trust taxation. Judy has a bachelor's in accounting from Castleton State College and a master's in taxation from the University at Albany. Dawn Doherty, I hope I said the last name right, is a certified public accountant and tax partner at BST. She has over 35 years accounting and tax experience, providing tax consultation, planning, compliance, and tax accounting services, in addition to tax controversy services to a wide variety of businesses and individuals. Dawn started her career with the Internal Revenue Service. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Judy Cahey, welcome back. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
You guys just moved.
We did. We moved up to British American. It's quite nice.
And your view is fantastic. I saw a picture on LinkedIn. It's really nice. So great to have you back here. It's getting to be that time of year, and we'll get into some of the horrors that await some of us in the tax department soon. Dawn Doherty, you're new to this show.
Yes, I am.
You worked for the Internal Revenue Service. Wow.
Yes, I know. You know, usually it's a great party conversation.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Do people just walk away when you say that?
not so much anymore since I've come into public accounting. So it's nice to be on the other side to help.
Is it we often joke about in the newsroom, you know, the hardcore journalists, and then somebody will slip away and go to become a public relations person, and they said, oh, they went to the dark side. Do you consider the Internal Revenue Service the dark side?
I don't. It's not an easy job, I can tell you that. You know, the tax code is very complex. There's volumes and volumes of regulations. There's court cases to think about. There's procedures to think about. And so it's not always an easy job for the folks who are administering the laws that our Congress writes.
Interesting. Now, do you think the tax code is too complex?
It's interpretable. You know, it's there for a reason. Most of the time, tax legislation is there for generating the revenue that keeps our country going. But it also can be for specific social causes or economic causes.
So you're not a flat taxer.
No, I think that the fairness really comes in the way that brackets are determined, and there should be I think different rules applying to different situations because we all experience something different. All businesses experience something different.
Yeah. We're joined today by Judy Cahey and Dawn Doherty of BST. It's a look at your year-end tax planning and a look ahead at 2023. Judy, you scared me a little bit as you were coming from the green room. You said, there's going to be some shock when people file their taxes. Explain.
So during the pandemic relief bills that came out, there were some expanded tax credits that applied that have now expired. So for example, last year, taxpayers could claim up to $3,600 for a child credit, and now it's $2,000. Similarly, there was a dependent care credit that was increased to about $8,000, but it's back to 20, $100 for 2022. So those kind of items are going to certainly surprise people, because in 2021, people received a higher refund than they otherwise did prior years.
And so some of us who were on the, I think I actually paid last year, despite having dozens of children, but those of us who are close to that line of getting a refund or getting zero, which is really where you want to be, right?
Yes.
You want to have zero, you'll end up paying. We'll have bigger taxes for a lot of folks.
The idea of this, you talk about year-end tax planning right now, is, you know, people need to understand what their 2022 tax situation is.
Yeah.
Right. So apart from those credits, what do they have going on? What's the level of their income? What's the level of their deductions? Where do they think they're going to be next year? And should you be deferring income? Should you be making extra deductions now? So there's a little bit of planning we do as CPAs this time of year to think about year end and what the action items are that need to be taken.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551. If you have a tax question for Judy Cahey or Dawn Doherty today, and, you know, we have an ex-IRS person here, so they should really... By the way, when you were at the IRS, were you involved in audits?
I was, as a matter of fact. I started my career in collections.
Oh.
And, yeah, even imagine that.
You seem very nice, though.
Oh, well, you know, I am human after all.
Right.
Even IRS people are, in fact, human beings. So
yes.
That's,
I'm only joking, of course.
Yeah, I did start in collections, and it was a great experience. And it certainly did help in my overall career, learning all of the elements of taxation, you know, both the collection side of it, the examination side of it, how things get processed on the inside.
Well, I'd love to find out. Now, thank heavens I've never been audited.
Good
but,
for you.
But I'd love to find out what happens. Mm-hmm. It seems like a terrifying prospect. I know there are things like red flags. This is a red flag. And when I use a commercially available software to do my taxes, and they say we're checking for red flags now, what red flags should we really be watching out for?
I think a lot of times whole very large unusual round numbers can appear odd in a tax filing. So if it's perfectly legit, you have nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
But sometimes, a larger number that doesn't necessarily line up to the prior year can indicate, gee, something significant has changed.
Is there a random aspect to who gets audited, or is it, we're going for the big fish, this looks suspicious to us?
There's a little bit of everything, to be honest. There are some audits that are conducted purely for compliance reasons, to understand where there might be gaps in knowledge among the taxpaying public. And then there are other audits that are specifically generated on one of those, as you indicated, something that looks unusual.
Yeah.
Or it pops out, you know, using algorithms.
Okay, so this is AI generated. There's not a person initially saying, well, I'm going to pull this one and take a look. This is a computer says, hey, check this out.
There's a combination of things. So there are AI generated indicators, but it still gets to a human being to make a determination whether or not it makes sense, or if something can be explained by a human, perhaps living in that geography, who understands that in this area, this is not uncommon for that particular number to be experienced among the taxpaying public.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a tax question for Dawn Doherty or Judy Cahey today from BST, our number once again, 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. And we'll be back and hit the phones in a moment. One 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It is a call-in show, after all. Vox Pop is the name of the show. Today we talk tax planning for the end of the year with Judy Cahey of BST and Dawn Doherty of BST. Now, when we were in the break, Judy, you said, you know, there's more than one kind of audit.
Right. So sometimes audits are as simple as what we call a desk audit. You get a letter in the mail. It says substantiate something or give us this paperwork to support your deduction or your income. And sometimes it's the person that pays you the visit to do the more expanded. So there are a variety of different audit types.
You know, decades ago, we did our taxes without computers because there weren't computers to do them on, and I would do them by hand, and I'm terrible at math. And I would look and I would check my work, and invariably I'd be wrong at some point. The IRS would just say, oh, yeah, you screwed this up. You owe me a little bit, and that would be it. There was no audit. They just said, you made a mistake.
That's not uncommon that there are notices generated for math errors, and they just make the correction and will either indicate you've either overpaid or underpaid and send you a bill for the amount that you've underpaid. It happens often.
Now, I assume that if you get that notice and you are going to get a full-fledged audit, this is the time you really want to have a professional on hand. And this is sort of what you guys do at times, right?
It is, as a matter of fact. We do represent our clients with the taxing authorities, and we work directly with the auditors or agents in order to resolve tax matters and help guide the whole process from beginning to end.
And there will be, as Judy mentioned in the break, more auditors available to go after us. How many more? Now, the Inflation Reduction Act was the name of the thing, right?
Yes.
Kind of a funny name, but there are a lot of IRS agents being hired.
That is the plan as part of the budget funding, is to both hire agents, but also other IRS employees. People who are in the customer service area.
It's been tough to get customer service for a long time.
You aren't kidding. We can tell you horror stories about waiting on phone lines for an hour and a half before getting a pickup on a call. It's been very challenging for the IRS to handle all of the legislative changes, plus with the pandemic, with them all being displaced, working remotely. It really has been very challenging for the employees. We understand this. It doesn't make it any less frustrating for individuals trying to reach them. So we just use persistence and eventually get through.
Well, you may have a secret number, I mean, at BST.
Unfortunately,
yeah?
I do not. I wish I did. No, if you know of one, maybe you could share it with me.
No, right? In fact, Judy and I have talked about this on many shows, that it's tough to get through. So maybe with all the hirings, you'll be able to get something other than please hold. All right, let's go. Speaking of please hold, let's go to our phones, 800-348-2551. Paul is in Saratoga. Paul, you're on.
Thank you so much. Very quick question. I worked for a job that didn't take out state taxes. So when I filed my taxes at the end of the year, the IRS said, okay, you owe us this much money. It was like $1,100. It wasn't a lot. But I'm wondering, what's my recourse to go back to that company and say, you know, this was your due diligence. You should have been doing this. Can I get money back for that, part of it, or what? And I'll take the answer off air, and I just want to say to you and your guests, many happy returns.
Ha-ha! Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. Okay, Judy, what do you think?
So you're saying state taxes, but then you're saying IRS. So there's two different tax jurisdictions that your employer is supposed to withhold on, and they have requirements as an employer to do so. But when you start a job, you prepare a form for each. So there's a federal form, there's a New York State withholding allowance form. You tell your employer your Social Security number, your status, and answer a few questions, and that's what controls how much that they ultimately withhold from you. So it sounds like you didn't have any withholding at all, and you're saying state withholding. You know, it's a question of, was it mismatched or was it? I don't think you have recourse as an employee, but I'll tell you, as an employer, if you're doing in business in New York State, you need to be filing quarterly payroll returns and doing the appropriate administration of the withholding. So
he shouldn't necessarily be as worried as the company.
It doesn't seem that way, no. Unfortunately, he was, you know, left holding the bag on the balance due. But you usually can tell by looking at your pay stub, and
yeah,
it's probably a good idea. This is a great time now that we're getting to the end of the year, to look at your last pay stub and see how much withholding you have, both for federal purposes and also for state purposes, to ensure that you do have enough withholding. And if you don't, then consider perhaps making an estimated tax payment before the end of the year by January 15th to kind of shore up whatever you can to avoid problems at filing.
So are there any, we talked about the child credits being reduced and the dependent credits being reduced. Are there any new credits there that may help mitigate that?
Not particularly. We did see a few energy efficient incentives come about in that Inflation Act that we discussed. So there's some abilities to get credits on new cars. There's even credits on used energy efficient cars. Rules around production in North America that caused a little bit of confusion with respect to new cars, but and they did extend your home improvements that you do energy efficient improvements to. So other than the energy improvement side of it and the car, the electric vehicle side of it, not so much.
Let's talk about the energy improvement side of it for a moment. Now, a lot of these energy improvements are quite expensive. Many people finance them. When you claim that credit, Are you claiming only what you paid in the calendar year, or the entire lump sum of what it's going to cost when you're done paying it off?
You claim the amount of the improvement cost in that cost you in year one.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Let's go back to our phones at 800-348-2551. Bob is in Albany. Bob, you're on.
Hi. I'm sure your guests are aware of the controversy that's growing about the special deep dive audits that were done on the former FBI Director James Comey and Andrew McCabe. And I'm wondering if they care to opine on whether they think there's any real possibility that these were random, and if they weren't, what does that mean about the politicization of IRS audit?
This is a fine question for the roundtable panel, Bob. But I, you know, these are accountants here, so you can answer it if you want, Judy and Dawn. But I think it's a toughie for you to answer.
Absolutely. You know, generally speaking, taxpayers' information is held in very strict confidence. We don't know what was contained in any individual's return unless we're preparing it for them.
Okay.
So it's hard to say.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot. And again, that's probably one that comes up from time to time between 9 and 11 on the roundtable every morning. And let's go to Queensbury. Stephen, you're on.
Good afternoon. How's everybody today?
Yeah, you know, pretty good.
Yeah, so you just answered a question referencing energy credits, and I was just in the middle of concentrating on something else. My question is related to that, and I'm sorry if you already answered it. So we're having solar put on the house, and I'm also going to be purchasing a solar car.
Cool. Solar car?
How much? I'm sorry, an electric car.
Okay.
Actually, it does have solar capability as well. It'll put about 40 miles per day onto it just from solar.
I love that. All right, I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah, look it up. I shouldn't say the name, but it's Aptera.
All right.
Anyway, how many years do those credits, the tax deductions, carry over? Is it just for the 1 year, or is it if you don't use them all on that year because of your tax liability, do they carry over to the next year?
I'm going to give you an off-the-cuff answer here. I think that your credit for your vehicle is going to have a different rule than your credit for your solar panels. So the solar panels falling within energy efficiency rules, yes, you're correct that it's non-refundable, but I believe the energy efficiency credit carries forward to future tax years. You just can't refund the delta in year one. I believe that because these rules significantly changed this summer with the enactment of the Inflation Reduction Act, I don't believe that the car credit actually carries forward.
Stephen.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And I'm seeing several emails that have come into my regular mailbox here. And so we'll have to, all right, we'll see what I can do. Somebody wrote in, why doesn't the IRS just figure everyone's taxes out, or at least some people's taxes for us? I think other countries do this.
Other countries do, yes. Our system at present is voluntary compliance. You know, a lot of people say voluntary in quotations, but, you know, it is truly a voluntary compliance system that we have. And I think, you know, for the most part, a lot of the information that the IRS receives through information documents that are filed by your banks, your brokers, on 1099s, and your wages filed by your employers. Not everyone has that situation, but instead may have other activities that are not reported on information documents. So it can make it very challenging to actually come up with a reasonable assessment of someone's tax situation.
Mm.
Because we do have a lot of different forms of business here in the United States that can impact how things come through.
This email from Penny, who is in Massachusetts. I have solar panels on my house that generates income by selling excess back to the grid. I own these panels. Since I'm essentially in business, can I deduct depreciation and other business expenses on my federal taxes?
I think you'd have a hard time deducting depreciation on something. You really need to be in an active trade or business in order to take depreciation. Incidental income or receiving a refund back wouldn't necessarily put you in business.
Would it have to reach a certain threshold of money?
Well, it's a matter of whether or not you're intending to be in a business of generating power. And if you want to be in a business of generating power, then that might subject you to a whole bunch of other regulations that
interesting
that you might not want to might not want to get involved in.
Here's an interesting one. And by the way, we're joined by Judy Cahey and Dawn Daugherty today from BST. We're talking tax planning for the end of the year. This one's from Sue. My mom sold me a house 30 years ago for $10. I understand I'll have to pay capital gains tax when I sell it. I also understand that I can reduce the amount of tax by the improvements made in the last 30 years. What will I need for proof so I don't have much of those records?
That's a little bit challenging, right? So I guess my first question for Sue would be, is it your primary residence? Because if it's your primary residence, there's a rule that allows you to exclude the gain as a single taxpayer on up to $250,000 as long as you use that as your residence 2 out of 5 years. So we don't know that fact about that. Assuming that it's not a primary residence, you know, your basis is $10, your improvements along the way have to do the best you could to estimate. But again, talking about a substantiation, it's not ideal that you don't have all the documents to support that should you need them.
Is that common, though, if you buy a house, essentially are given a house, and then, I mean, can the capital gains just be insane on that 20, 30 years later?
In today's market, absolutely, if you think about it. So I always advise clients when they are doing improvements in their home to keep a file of everything that you've done. It will benefit you later because it adds to your basis, and that will reduce the amount of gain later on.
The other thing about gifts is they're carryover basis. So you step into the shoes of the person gifting you the house. So if the house was purchased for $5,000 and it's gifted to you 30 years ago, then your basis becomes your parents' or your relatives' basis.
So it may not be that bad for Sue.
Well, but it depends, right?
Interesting. All right, back to the phones we go. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number to Selkirk. Nancy, you're on.
Yes, I'd like to know what are going to be the tax bracket changes for 2023 so that I and others can do tax planning.
Ah, That's a very good question. As you know, the tax brackets change every year. In
yes,
this year, because the interest rates were particularly high, so there were some changes in the rates from 22 to 23. Let me just reference my table here. So the first bracket for 23 is our 10% bracket. So for single filers up to 11,000 is on the 10%, 12% up to 44,000, between 11,000 and 44,000. 22% rate would apply for those in the 44, for taxable income in the 44 to about 95,000. 24% would apply from 95,375 to 182,100. 32% would apply for taxable income between 182 to 231,250. 35% is from 231,250 to 578,125, and 37% would be anything over 578,125, and that's for individual filers that are single. Of course, married filing joint, it's typically double that, but not quite. I can tell you that the top bracket for joint filers with taxable income, anything over 693,750 or more is taxed at 37%. And, you know, if the head of household has a slightly different rates, but close, I would say, to the single filer, a little bit more favorable than the single filer.
Yeah, the IRS.gov website does a nice job because there's a variety of things that for 2023 that are going upwards due to inflation adjustments. So everything from how much you can defer to a 401k to next year's standard deduction, all of those items change year to year. And obviously with the inflation factor, those are all bumping up right now.
Nancy.
So you said the 12% rate would be from 11,000 to 44,000?
The 12% rate would be for 2023. Let me just refer.
Is your
what status?
For, yeah, what status? Single or married filing joint or?
Single.
Yeah, so that would be 11,000 to 44,725 would be taxed at a 12% rate.
And then the next group is the what percent?
22% rate would apply to the next next amount up to 95,375.
Okay, that answers my question.
Super.
Okay, Nancy, thanks a lot for the call. This email from CT, who's a musician. I play 20 to 25 solo gigs a month here in Florida. I make about 40 to 50K a year. Most places give me tax forms. In April, I bring my receipts, my mileage, and house info to a tax service and pay what I owe. I'm not listed as an official business. Do you have any recommendations on what I should do to save money or to be smarter with taxes? Become a business? And also, CT says he plays little Zappa sometimes. So that's very good. All right, good for you. What do you think he could do?
Oh, I think CT already is in a business. You know, the fact that if he's doing this for the purpose of making money, even if you're enjoying it, you know, there's certain things that that can give rise to the indication that there is a trade or business. If you're in it to make money, and that's your intention, even if you love what you do, and hopefully we all do.
Yeah.
But it sounds like he's already got a pretty active trader business. Perhaps some of the things that he can think about is keeping good track of all of his expenses.
Guitar strings and everything else.
Absolutely.
And amps and whatever.
The better the records for that, the better for yourself at year end when you bring all that lovely information into your accountant to work on your tax return.
Plus mileage, and CT is living in the right state.
Yes.
Florida. There you go. Number here is 800-348-2551. Judy Cahey and Dawn Doherty join us from BST Financial. And we will be, you know what, Zach, let's take a break right now. 800-348-2551, and we'll be back for the home stretch in a moment.
Hey,
Vox Pop on WAMC, taxes and tax planning today with Judy Cahey and Dawn Daugherty. The number is 800-348-2551. And back to the phones we go to North Adams. Philip, you're on.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My wife and I are retired, and I haven't filed any taxes because I've been underneath. We make about $27,000 a year. And we own our own. We live in a mobile home, and that's the only income we have. So we haven't filed any taxes. And this year here, I need a new car. So I've taken quite a bit of money from in some of our annuities or IRS and stuff. And I don't know if there's a limit, or if I should even have to file taxes, or how much I can make before I have to file, or if I should do have to file at all.
So the 2022 standard deduction, are you over the age of 65?
Yes, I'm 77.
Right. So there's a standard deduction. I'm just trying to get it in front of me. The standard is typically $25,900, but they bump it up, I believe, for...
It's 27 for 2023.
I believe it's $1,400 for each of you. So it's really going to depend on where you land. Let's see here. And the other factor is that if you collect Social Security and you reach a certain level of income, that can also trip the Social Security to be somewhat taxable as well. So as a married taxpayer, typically when you're in the lower bracket, there's not a taxability to your Social Security, but when you reach a certain point, there is. So let me just grab the standard deduction for
standard
you.
Deduction for 20.
Yes, both our incomes, that's all we receive is Social Security for our income.
I see. 2023, if you're $27,700, you'd need a filing. And for 2022, if you're over $25,900, generally speaking, for married filing joint, that's the filing threshold.
How much are we, in general, how much are we talking about as a distribution from the retirement account? How significant?
How much am I getting?
Yeah, how much are you taking out of your account that you're going to have to pay tax on to buy the car?
Oh, I'm actually going to be getting probably around $20,000. I have some out of an annuity, some out of a Roth plan, and some out of another stock plan. So I'm taking some money out of two or three different accounts, but I'm probably going to wind up with like $20,000 over what we normally make.
Yeah, so you said a couple things there. Typically, a distribution out of a Roth isn't a taxable event unless you're underage or don't follow certain rules. In general, though, overall, if you took out about 20 grand from retirement accounts and that was your only income apart from Social Security and you're married, you're generally, you know, you would be far below the 27,000 or so and not have a filing requirement.
I see. All right, thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. This email from Bruce. Once I reach the age of minimum required distribution, please explain the benefit of contributing IRA funds directly to charity.
Okay, so they call this a QCD. So once we had a change in these rules a couple of years ago. We had a SECURE Act passed. And they're now talking about SECURE 2.0, but that hasn't passed yet. Mm-hmm. So right now, when you hit the age of 72, you have to start taking required minimum distributions. Those look to what the fair value of your account is and a life expectancy table published by the IRS. You have the ability to take up to $100,000 of a distribution per year and have your trustee on your account do a qualified distribution to a 501c3 charity. When you do that, you get your 1099 at the end of the year. You don't have to pick up the income that you do that with, but nor do you get the charitable deduction for it. So the concept is, you know, typically when you increase your gross income, you sometimes limit other things in that gross income. For example, if you were itemizing medical deductions or something. So having a lower gross income benefits you overall, So what they do is, again, there's specific rules to this. You have to have your trustee do it. The maximum is $100,000, but you can tell your trustee to go ahead and make the contribution directly from your account out to the charity, and they report it on a 1099 at the end of the year.
Judy Cahey is with us on Dawn Doherty from BST, an accounting, tax, and financial services consulting firm. Let's go to Rensselaer. Richard, you're on. Hello, Richard. Is he potted up, Zach, the engineer? Richard, are you there? You're on mute, and now you're gone. Well, I'm sorry, sir, and I apologize for that. Merle and Argyle, I know you're there. Hello.
I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
I can find the phone.
That would be good.
I found the phone.
Okay.
Charitable contributions. Now, I thought I heard on NPR that they're deductible even if you don't itemize.
That is no longer correct. So for 2021, we had one of those pandemic relief bills that allowed you to, on a married return, claim a $600, up to a $600 deduction, and on a single return, up to a $300 deduction if you claim the standard deduction. For 2022, your ability to deduct a charity, a contribution to charity, is contingent upon you itemizing deductions. So when we file tax returns, right.
So you can't claim it for 2 years ago. I didn't claim it. I wasn't aware of it.
Oh, so you can, if you think you're owed money back because you didn't claim something on a, like on your 2021 return, you made a charitable contribution and you didn't take that on your return, you have the ability to amend your return and claim that now. You have 3 years from the time you file a return to amend it, to fix it, to do that.
Oh, okay. And a real quick question, and probably real simple. Dividends are taxable when you in from your investment. I got an investment company and I get dividends.
Okay.
Yep.
Are they taxable?
They are. And the you know, there's different rates that apply to them. Some get taxed at your ordinary rate, some get taxed at a more favorable they call it a qualified
rate. They are taxable.
Absolutely. Yes. And they come through on a 1099 at your end.
Because one person was telling me they weren't, one saying they were, but then I looked at my tax form. And
yeah. Well, I think you can believe Judy.
And they claimed it as income.
All right, man. Hey, Merle, good luck. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And let's go to Dave in Albany. Dave, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I deal in cash a lot. So I just, you said earlier, if you're honest, you have nothing to worry about. So I just sold a piece of property and I made a couple hundred thousand and I wanted the money in cash and the bank gave me a hard time. I don't know why, but I had to wait 9 days to get it, but they did give it to me. But I have another big project I'm selling next year, or 2023, next year. And it's a $1.6 million. And the bank has given me a hard time about that. And, you know, it's a legal transaction, and I just don't want money in the bank. So do you have any recommendations about that?
Well, I mean, we certainly can't opine on whether or not the bank can or can't do certain things. As you know, there's a separate set of regulations that that applies to banks, and it's normal that they would go through their paces in order to meet their requirements for filing certain types of reports with Treasury. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not going to be reporting this for tax purposes, because when you sell your real estate, you will be issued a 1099-S for the sale, and
right.
I'm sure you'll receive a settlement statement.
I want to pay all the taxes. I want to do everything right. I'm not looking to hide. I'm not looking to
glad
do
to
anything
hear that.
Illegal.
Glad to hear
so
that.
I'm not looking for that. I don't want anything illegal. I just find it very hard that the bank has given it, you know, it's my money. So they're, you know, I'm going to file all my taxes the right way, pay the fees, whatever. But they gave me a hard time of taking $200,000, and you know, I had to see the, you know, I had to see multiple people, and I was just wondering this big transaction. I told them I'm doing the same thing, and I was just wondering on your end, what do you suggest?
I'm seeing shaking heads here. Can you answer this in any way?
I mean, I'm not versed in banking regulation. What I can tell you is that there are limits on what U.S. banks can and cannot do, and that's governed by a separate set of federal regulations.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. And so if he makes a big sale and it's 9-day delay, this is anti-money laundering clause or something?
Yeah, there's a whole separate set of federal regulations that apply for banking and financial institutions, and it's there for good reason to help understand, you know, trafficking in cash transactions.
I'm sure it is for a good reason, but I can also understand why Dave is annoyed.
It's his money.
Lucy in Vermont. Lucy, you're on.
Hi. A friend died and left a small amount of money to me in her will. And when it arrived from the executor, it was a check, which I put in my checking account. Mm-hmm. I then divvied up for, I donated the whole of it to different groups locally. And I wondered how that affects my filing for this year.
So when a person dies and they have an estate, the estate can, like, if you're a beneficiary and it says, okay, here's a specific bequest to you, that typically doesn't come out with a tax consequence. If you're a residuary beneficiary, meaning, okay, the estate took care of everything and you're paid out the rest, an estate itself can, you know, issue, basically you'd have to pay tax on the income should the estate pay out income. So tell me, the amount you received from the estate, was that just a little bit of principal left? Did the estate have much in the way of income? The executor should be doing the reporting consequences for whatever the estate needs to do. So an estate can file an income tax return and needs to file an income tax return if it had interest, dividends, capital gains, that kind of thing.
Lucy.
I have no idea. Right. I have no idea.
Right. So you need to. Yeah. So my advice would be just check with the executor. If you get a distribution and it's principal, that's not taxable to you. If you get a distribution and it constitutes interest or dividends or even capital gains on a final estate return, that can have a tax consequence to you. And you would get basically a tax form, a Schedule K-1 from the executor when they filed with the IRS the appropriate form. So you really need to get more facts from the executor on this situation.
All right, Lucy, thanks so much for the call. We go now to Tom in Hadley. Tom, you're on.
Hello.
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 Hello. You're on.
Hello.
Okay. Hi there. You're on the tax show. Go ahead.
Yep. I haven't filed my taxes for 2021 because New York State, during the unemployment and the epidemic, they haven't sent me a 1099-G, and I've been after them for over a year now. And I've asked them and gone down to New York State Department of Labor 6 times, and the only answer I get is, we will send it out to you within 5 to 7 business days.
Oh, boy.
And I've had calls all the way from the governor all the way down. So what do I do?
You had the governor call you?
Yep.
Phew. All right. Well, good for you. All right. What do you think?
Well, I would say, Tom, if you have access to a computer and the internet, you can, generally speaking, obtain your 1099 online through New York State. And that is the best way.
I don't own a computer.
Okay. Maybe visit the local library.
Okay.
And
so that's interesting.
So, well, my taxes were done over the phone, not on a computer.
Okay.
All right. Well, I don't know. Judy, any ideas?
You know, sometimes these jurisdictions aren't mailing out the paper anymore. They're making people go online to access the prior year refund and the 1099-G, so they may not have mailed it. I think I placed a phone call to New York State and asked for the amount. You don't need the physical document. You need the amount of the document to tell you what the reporting is.
Yes. When you call New York State, there's nobody there. They're all working from home now.
Ah, yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of that going around. Tom, good luck. We appreciate the call. Let's go to Maureen in Schenectady. Maureen, you're on.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a question regarding the electronic payments. So I'm self-employed, and I receive payments through PayPal, Venmo, Cash App. And I understand that they will start to issue, those companies will start to issue 1099. My question is, how do I know how much is going to be sent, or how do I know how much the 1099s will be? How can I find that out ahead of time?
Okay. Well, if you're keeping your own records, which you should be keeping your own records just to
yep.
ensure that your records agree to whatever 1099 you might receive, I'm thinking a 1099-K is most likely the form that you would receive. And those are the most mm-hmm. commonly utilized with payment services. If you meet the threshold for reporting, and some are issuing even if it's, you know, below the threshold just for completeness, as long as your records are complete, that's really going to be what will drive what needs to be reported in your income tax return, not necessarily what's on a 1099. It's always good, of course, to know from your own records what you received from each of those different services in the event they've made a mistake. And you can go back to them and have it corrected.
Maureen, thank you very much for the call. By the way, is there a time limit for when the 1099s have to be sent out?
Generally speaking, that's January 31st for 1099 issuance.
Okay, and all the letters that are after the 1099, the G's and whatever else, they're always going to be in your hands early February.
Typically speaking, yes. And, you know, very often it can be challenging for some companies to generate those 1099s because they're still doing calculations. So just be on the lookout for corrected 1099s. We see this often with investment companies where there's complex calculations that get performed. And sometimes they don't have, the numbers solid until after the fact, even though they've issued a 1099 timely.
And Ray, those reporting requirements, that 1099-K on processing credit card statements, those thresholds have came down significantly.
Yeah.
So more people are going to be getting in the mail because for 2022, it's going to be $600 worth of credit card payments through a processor like Venmo. So more and more people
I'm feeling
will
a tremor in the force. I think it's going to be a rough tax year. All right, I'm so sorry to everybody left on the line. I am so sorry to everybody who emailed. We are out of time. We will have to do this again. Judy Cahey, Dawn Daugherty, thank you for being here.
You are welcome. Thanks for having us.
We'll talk to you soon. Support comes from the Ashokan Center. Olive Bridge presenting a holiday craft at Book Fair with food, drinks, new children's books, hands-on colonial-era crafting, December 11th, 10 to 2, ashokancenter.org. At Little Blue for the younger crew, featuring local American-made and fairly traded clothing, toys, and gifts for youngsters in Thorne's Marketplace, Northampton, thebluemarble.biz. Once again, thank you very much to Judy Cahey and Dawn Daugherty of BST for being with us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phone screened by Susie Chekai, and we will do this one again. Popular show today. Everyone's concerned. Let's face it. Let's get through this tax filing, and then we'll talk about next year. Next year. Tomorrow, it's Food Friday. We get ready for sensible, healthy, tasty holiday eating. Yeah, it can happen. Our pal Nicole Rodriguez will tell you about it. That's tomorrow at 2. We'll see you then.